Rishus Rav Nuber, Rishus Ravanan, and Rishus Fellow Talmidim.
The Sos of Delvos the Kever. Our tradition teaches us that a Talmid Chacham continues to teach long after he is no longer physically with us. Personally, did not have the opportunity this week to be in Eretz Yisrael, but at Yeshiva 2 days ago, the opportunity to hear two sets of Hespedim for Rav Aaron Ben Yechiel, for Rav Aaron Soloveitchik, for Aaron Lichtenstein. And it was once both saddening and inspiring. It was saddening to think about what we lost, and it was inspiring in the sense that he set, as so many speakers highlighted, he set a dugmai sheet. He set a personal example that continues to call to us, even though he's no longer with us, continues to call to us, and to continue to demand of us in his uniquely sweet way of setting extremely high standards. And we're privileged this evening to be partnering with RCBC in presenting these different hesped for Aaron, and we're privileged this evening to be joined by so many senior colleagues, members of the RCBC, Rabbi Adler, Rabbi Baum, Rabbi Krohn. And we'll be privileged this evening, I apologize, I haven't noticed someone in the audience, we'll be privileged this evening to Rabbi Wiener, Rabbi Gottlieb, we're privileged this evening to hear from several Talmidim, several Arab communities, Rabbanim, who learned under Rav Aaron Kadosh. We'll begin with, to be led by, in a parak of Tehillim, by an old friend and a colleague, the Rav of the Beis Medrash of Bergenfield, and Lina Rabbeim at the Ramaz Upper School at Moshe Stavsky.
Bismol David, Adonai mi agur be'ahalecha, mi yishkon behar kachecha. Holech tamim ufoel tzedek, v'dover emes dilvavo. Lo ragal al lishono, lo asa l're'ehu ra'a, v'cherpa lo nasa al kirovo. Nivze be'enav nim'as, v'es yirei Adonai yichabed, nishpa l'hara v'lo yamir. Kaspo lo nasan b'neshech, v'shochar al naki lo lakach, ose eile lo yimot le'olam.
I have the opportunity to hear this evening from two of the senior Talmidim of Aaron who serve as Rabbanim in our community. We'll hear soon from Rabbi Chaim Jachter. We'll hear at the moment from Rabbi Michael Tabas, who the personal interactions I've had with him over many, many years bespeaks so many of the rich wealth, the multifarious wealth that Rabbi Aaron presented to his Talmidim. Rabbi Tabas presents in his person and his relationship with colleagues, with Talmidim, with everyone he meets. Rabbi Tabas is the Rosh Yeshiva and head of school at MTA. He is the Rav of Zichar Mordechai, and it's a pleasure and a privilege to ask Rabbi Tabas to address us.
Rishus the Rav Madasar of Neuberger, the associate of Cohen, Rabban of the RCBC, the other Chashev Rabbanim, Morva Rabosai. It is with a great sense of trepidation and personal inadequacy that one gets up before a Chashev Tzibur such as this in order to say a few words of Hesped for one's Rebbe. especially when dealing with a Rebbe like Moreno Rabbeinu, Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, Zecher Tzadik Livracha, it's extremely difficult. It's difficult to be mastered in Adam Gadol, and certainly Rav Aaron was an Adam Gadol in every sense of the word. The term is bandied about and perhaps applied to people who are maybe not deserving of that title. But Rav Aaron Zatzal was a Gadol in the sense, not only Gadol meaning greatness, but Gadol meaning large. He was larger than life. His personality encompassed so many different aspects. And he excelled in so many different areas that it's almost difficult to imagine. Chazal speak of someone who has Torah Gedula b'makom echad. And that certainly is Moreno Rav Aaron. Torah Gedula b'makom echad. Torah greatness, and greatness in being large and encompassing so many different aspects. Much has been said and written, not only over the last couple of days, but even the last couple of months, in the last few years, articles and essays exploring the thought of Rav Aaron. Just recently, an edition of Tradition came out, which had a collection of essays by various different people exploring different aspects of Rav Aaron's religious thought and his Torah greatness. And over the last number of years, different svarim have come out from the yeshiva, Har Etzion, his yeshiva, containing his chidushim and shiurim. And much undoubtedly will be said and written in the coming days, the coming weeks, the coming months, by people more learned, more erudite than I. And therefore it's a daunting task to try and say a few appropriate words in his honor and his memory. But one thing Rav Aaron taught us was to always strive for excellence. Not to settle for mediocrity, not to settle for being an Adam Benoni, middle of the road, but to do one's best. So I will do my best with these words this evening, mindful of the din that one cannot let an Adam Gadol be nistar shelo kehalacha, even though I know in advance that I will not really do him justice. But part of what motivates me this evening, especially in the presence of individuals who perhaps did not know him or did not know him well, there's a notion of Akaras HaTov that I have personally towards Rav Aaron, who molded me, and whatever I've had the fortune to be able to accomplish is due to my great Rebbeim, which he is certainly one. And therefore, in a sense of Akaras HaTov, I think it's important to share some stories, some insights that will perhaps give, and again, especially some of the younger people, some of the older people as well, an opportunity to reflect on who this great man, this man who was larger than life, was. I had occasion 2 days ago, as Rakon referred to mention in the Beis Medrash in YU, and I had a spadim here in New York, to note that in my mind, the pasuk that typified or exemplified or encapsulated what Rav Aaron was all about, what he represented, at least to me and I know to many others, was the pasuk in Parashas Miketz, Haninsar Kazeh Ish Asher Ruach Elokim Bo. Can we find such a person in whom Ruach Elokim, the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu, was evident? Now, some of you will note that that phrase was not uttered by one of the Avos or one of the Shvatim. It was uttered by Paro, the Paro of the Yosef story. After Yosef interpreted Paro's dreams accurately and then presented a plan to help the Egyptian society solve the problem of the impending famine, Paro exclaimed to his members of his court, he couldn't help but have that reaction. But lest we think that is a quality admirable only when coming from the perspective of a paro. I remind you that in Parshas Pinchas, when Moshe Rabbeinu is told by HaKadosh Baruch Hu to appoint Yehoshua as his successor, the pasuk says, "Kach es Yehoshua ish asher ruach bo." Select Yehoshua because he has ruach, he has the spirit of God in him. And indeed, the pasuk says in Yeshaya, we learned it less than 2 weeks ago on Achron Shel Pesach of the Haftorah, regarding none other than the Mashiach himself, the pasuk says, "V'nocha olav ruach Hashem." So this notion of a person possessing the spirit of HaKadosh Baruch Hu in an evident way is something which is worthy of note. Why did Paro say this? I suspect and suggest to your thinking that because if one is fortunate, once in a while, once in a long while, if one has this chus, one comes upon a person whose stature is so imposing, whose personality is so towering, whose character is so striking, that when you see that person, and certainly when you get to know that person, you cannot help but exclaim, "Anim tzor kazeh ish asher ruach Elokim bo." One has to say this. And this is how I know I felt, and many of the Talmidim felt, in the presence of Marina Barina or of Aaron Zechat Tzadik Levocha. The Ruach Elokim exuded from his every move, from his every statement, from his every written word, from his every spoken word. People in Yeshiva remember, so on Fridays in my time, he used to give a shiur from Ramban al Torah. He came in on Friday, there were no regular shiurim on Friday, as the case in many yeshivas, especially in Eretz Yisrael. So he gave a shiur in Ramban. So I used to go to the shiur in Ramban, and then afterwards he would go back to Yerushalayim, either to stay for Shabbos, or if he was coming to the yeshiva to pick up his family to bring them. So guys used to run after the shiur, guys who wanted to go to Yerushalayim. So they would try and tramp, they would try and hitch a ride with him. And I used to make it my business to always go to Yerushalayim on Friday, even if I didn't have to go to Yerushalayim, so I could sit in the car and just listen to what he said and what he was discussing. If someone had to go to Yerushalayim, I gave it the spot. But if there was enough room, I always made sure to sit in the car. I couldn't get enough. I just sat there, I wanted to ask questions and listen to other people's questions, because it was just such an uplifting and inspiring experience. What was it that was significant about Yosef that prompted Paro to utter this response? I suggest three simple things. His insight, his knowledge, his ability to use that knowledge, his awareness of the world that he was in, the country that was going to face a famine, and his desire to help and to interact. What should one look for in a Rebbe? What should one look for in a role model, a teacher? I'm going to suggest three things, at least three things, that I'd like to focus on this evening. And Rabbi Aaron had all three. First, speaking about a Rebbe, greatness in Talmud Torah, which itself, I suggest, divides, as Rabbi Aaron would do it, the four sections. Knowledge of Torah. Okay. Rabbi Lichtenstein knew Kol HaTorah Kula. It's not an exaggeration. Anyone who spoke to him knows that. He was as comfortable giving shiurim and kachrim in Paris as he was in the more yeshivisha mesechtas and tzedarim of Nashim and Zikin. I remember when I was in the yeshiva, on Motzei Shabbos, used to give shiurim in Mishnayos Paris. I used to go, I confess, not always, perhaps most of the time, not following everything he was saying. Whatever I happened to know about Taras, there were lots of no shiurim. He was as comfortable with that, as I said, with any other. He knew Kol HaTorah Kula, tremendous breadth of knowledge. It was at his fingertips. Basically, instant recall. And that, of course, was a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, his photographic memory. I mentioned to the students at MTA that my chavrusa, you know, Rabbi Aaron used to have guys for Shabbos. The American boys would come for Shabbos. So, Chavrusa was there for Shabbos, and happens to be that on Friday night, his children were talking after Shabbos, after the Shabbos Suda, and were discussing, his older children were born when he was yet in America, before he made Aliyah, and the younger children were born in Eretz Yisrael. And the older children, when Chavrusa told me the story, were trying to explain to the younger children how much bigger the United States is than Eretz Yisrael. were trying to show, I mean, the younger children couldn't believe it's not true. It can't be, it's so big. And they were describing the state of Texas, how big the state of Texas is compared to the land of Israel. And they thought, the younger children thought the older ones were pulling their legs, and it wasn't the truth. So they asked Abba, ask Abba. So Baron knew offhand what the square mileage of Texas was. I doubt he studied too many atlases, but he saw it once and he remembered it. So that's a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu. But of course, that Zikaron was applied to his Torah knowledge, certainly. The story that I heard from people in the Rav Shir, that Rav Aaron used to come when he came back to America, he would go to the Rav Shirim when he was here. And one time Rav Aaron was sitting in the Rav Shir, and after the Rav had already been speaking for about 2 hours about a certain sugya, the Rav said towards the end of the Shir, he said, I remember a number of years ago, I compared this sugya to a certain other sugya, and it was parallel in 8 different ways. I believe it had to do with Tom Kika, but I can't swear to that. I wasn't there. Does anybody know the 8 ways? And nobody said anything. The Rav said again, does anybody know the 8 ways? And nobody said anything. Finally, the Rav said, Aaron, what are the 8 ways? Because after the Rav was giving shir for 2 hours, if Aaron got up for an hour and a quarter, went through the 8 ways, after which the Rav turned to the boys and says, you know, he has a pretty good memory. I remember one time in the shir, a fellow asked a question. A fellow was also a big bucky, a young fellow was in the shir when we were there, and actually finished shots. I think he was 18 or 19. So he asked Rabbi Aaron a question from a Gemara, and I remember it was one of the few times. He paused for a moment, and he was clearly somewhat bewildered. And he asked, where is that Gemara? And the fellow answered, in Shabbos. Oh, he took out Shabbos, immediately opened to the page. There are 157 blot in Shabbos. But once he knew there was in Shabbos, he found it incomplete. So this mastery of Kol HaTorah Kula was certainly a significant part of him. However, as much as it was a gift from HaKadosh Baruch Hu, the second piece of greatness in Talmud Torah besides knowledge is commitment to Talmud Torah Hasmada. Talmud Torah was his life. He was always learning. To me, the most moving thing that I saw in the last few days, and just happened to hit me, was that after his papyrus, so they had someone forwarded to me a picture of the Beis HaMedrash in Gush Etzion, and his makom was just a candle. His farm weren't there, he wasn't there. But that's where he sat all the time. And he learned. People told me, Rabbi Yosef Blau, the Mashgiach in YU, told me this the other day, they were contemporaries more or less, and he said that one time Rabbi Blau wanted to finish a certain thing in time for something or other, so he stayed into the Beis Medrash until 1:32 in the morning, which was not as common then, as Baruch Hashem, maybe it's become more common today. And as he left the Beis Medrash, he thought, he assumed he was the only person in the Beis Medrash at that hour, but as he walked out, there sitting in the back in the corner is a Baron Lichtenstein, who learned till 1:30 in the morning, 2 in the morning, even later. Tremendous hasmada. Talmud Torah was his life. He always had Svarim with him. I remember an occasion he told me this. He was discussing something with the Rav, and the Rav referred to something from the Matzah Vitri. Matzah Vitri is Matzah, not Matzah like Rosh Hashanah Kippur. Matzah Vitri is a sefer on halakos and things around the year from the Beis Medrash of Rashi. So the Rav quoted or referred to some of the Matzah Vitri, and the Baron said, he was telling over the story to me, he said, I happen to have my copy of the Matzah Vitri with me. And I'm listening. I have Matzah Vitri at home, but it's not one of the things I tend to carry around. And yeah, I had it with him because that's what he was learning. And the story is, and I haven't corroborated this, but when he was in Harvard pursuing his PhD in English literature, to carry around with him, he had a Seder, a personal Seder in Tshuvas HaRashba, that he read either between classes or maybe sometimes in classes if he wanted to steal a few minutes of Talmud Torah. He was always learning, that was his life. The third thing is he was a master teacher. It's another thing you look for in a Rebbe. A master teacher. He himself, as a student in Chaim Berlin, I believe completed high school when he was 14, and then spent 2 years learning the Beis Medrash in Chaim Berlin, and there went through Shas, I think, for the first time in a systematic fashion. But he shared his knowledge. Master teacher, in every sense. His shiurim were highly organized, the clarity of thought and presentation, erudition in both the written and the spoken word. Those who attended his shiurim, he would give a shiur kali for an hour and a half, or the regular shiur for 2 hours, and then at the end, Tot l'sakein. Which means, okay, now to summarize. In the last 5 or 8 minutes, he went through every single thing, point by point, that he just said in the last 2 hours. I remember the first time, I was just amazed. When everything was organized and clear. First we started the Gemara, then we had the Tosfos, this Kasha, and then Rashi had the different Teretz, and there was a Kasha against this, just everything in exact order. When he said Tovus Hakeim, we all breathed let out a deep breath, that means the Shiur is over, and then he rapidly went through the entire Shiur in a matter of moments. Just that kind of organization is staggering. He loved to teach. A number of years ago, he happened to be visiting, it was the night of the Gush dinner, if I'm not mistaken, or the night after. He was in New York, and he was staying in the Rav's apartment. The Rav was not staying in the apartment anymore. And in that dormitory, the YU Morgenstern Morg dormitory, there was a bomb scare. And they had to empty out the morgue dormitory. So where do you send guys? And then in the middle of March, they're standing, I can't stand outside. So they sent them across the street to the base medrash, what's now called the old base medrash. That's where they sent the guys. And Aaron happened to be there because he was in the apartments. They evacuated him too. So he went across the street, and guys were sitting around the base medrash in their sweats and the pajamas. And someone said to Aaron, maybe he'll say a shir. So on the spot, he got up and he spoke again for about an hour and a half on the subject of Pikuach Nefesh. No preparation, nothing. Just he loved to teach. That's what it was. The Talmid asked him, he had something to say. People know that when he came to America, he came right off the plane, right to give a shiur, back to Eretz Yisrael, right off the plane, then never mind jet lag and recovering in time. The people from Eretz Yisrael, what the Talmidim said, the Israeli Talmud had to go off to the army, so they had to leave at 6 o'clock in the morning, so he gave a shiur at 4:30 in the morning, so the guys could have a shiur before they went. There was no concept of time or sleep or recovering when they had an opportunity to share Torah with his Talmidim. He worked hard. He would run to his shiurim. Again, the students in yeshiva will remember, you couldn't keep up with him. He walked, and all he had under his arms, I don't know, 8 or 10 or 12 svarim under the arm, and he walked rapidly from wherever he was going to the room where he gave the shiur. We were much younger. We couldn't keep up. He's carrying all these svarim. He's running. It's time to give a shiur. That's all that matters. There is a story that I don't know. I can't verify, but it was bandied about. And it was said, I remember hearing it years ago, and I'm sure people talk about it now, that during the Yom Kippur War, he volunteered to help in town. He wasn't in the army, but he volunteered to help. So one of the jobs they gave him was to deliver milk. There used to be such a thing called the milkman, and the milkman's job was to deliver. People got milk delivered to their home. So he served as the milkman. And Rav Gusman, the great Magid Eshir, was sitting on his porch, learning with a Talmud, when Rav Aaron, who was the milkman, came with the milk, and he walked in. Rav Gusman was talking with one of his Talmidim about a difficult sugya. So Aaron couldn't help himself. So he suggested a teretz to the kasher of Gusman said, and they talked back and forth, and Rav Aaron offered a different mahalach in the shir, a different direction in the shir, and then he left. And it said, I can't verify, Rav Gusman said to Talmud, what a wonderful place in Eretz Yisrael, even the milkmen are beginning to call it Torah. But he had love for his Talmidim, regardless of their level, regardless of their background. And then the fourth thing one looks for in a Rebbe in terms of greatness in the Torah, the fourth aspect of greatness in Talmud Torah, is diktuk and mitzvahs, precision, unflinching, uncompromising, commitment to halacha. He was an eved Hashem, an eved, in the sense of his master tells him that's what you do. Halacha is immutable. He was personally machmir in many areas, didn't impose on everybody else, but everything precise, the way it says in the Shulchan Aruch. I remember, again, Talmidim and Shul will remember, how he dried his hands by Natil Zidane. Now, I remember the first time I saw it. He was drying his hands, okay? I thought, well, he got his hands really wet. I mean, he was with the towel, drying and drying. And then I realized, then he went to wash. So there is a din, without going into details right now, that if you have a little water on your hand before you wash the Zidane, so come to the Dime machine, whatever the details are right now. You try and get there. Sometimes you see people, they'll wipe their hands before they wash it. They get any liquid off the hands, so halakhic reason, nothing now. But he dried his hands so thoroughly before he washed. That's the din. So that's what he did. And it was also makkur in Mayim Achronim. And Mayim Achronim is a machlokas, as in last week said a little bit, that whether it applies to this man hazeh, it doesn't apply to this man hazeh. He told me once that he took on the chumrah of Mayim Achronim when he left YU to go to Harvard. Because he felt that if he's leaving the yeshiva environment, he had to take on something that he wasn't machped on in the past. Now, I'm quite sure that when he went to Harvard, he had Siddharm and learning, and he put on tefillin every day, there's no doubt. But he felt that if he's leaving the Kosei Beis HaMedrash, and it's appropriate to take on an additional chumrah. I heard just this week from Rabbi Meir and Tier, Rabbi Eli Cohen, who was in the neighborhood also, that when Rav Aaron came back to the yeshiva in recent years, after having been ill, so he came back to the Beis Medrash, and the first time back to give the Shir Kali, he gave the same hour and a half Shir Kali, and basically when it was over, collapsed in his seat from exhaustion, having just come back from his illness. And a couple of boys went over and said, Rebbe, can I get you a glass of water? To which he responded, I try not to drink in the Beis HaMedrash. That's the din. And when they would have to take him out to have him driven back to his house, so he would always walk out of the Beis HaMedrash and then call the person who was driving on the cell, call on the cell phone. And people said, why don't you just call? You'll save the time. You'll have to stand. I try not to use the cell phone in the Beis HaMedrash. Beis HaMedrash was saying Kodesh Kodashim. So that's the first thing one looks for in a Rebbe, greatness in Talmud Torah in those aspects. The second thing I think you look for in a Rebbe is, does the Rebbe understand my world? Can he relate to me? Is he in the world that I'm in? And certainly Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, the Tzaddik Livracha, was well aware of the world in which we live. He valued world knowledge, but he used that knowledge to enrich and to develop his learning and his Torah personality. He became the moral voice of our Orthodox community. Kabel of Sa'emes Minisha Amra, accept the truth wherever it was. And people who heard his shiurim know that he would quote not only from Shas and Poskim, but from other thinkers and writers. And people heard him say many times, referring to this or that celebrated essay by Matthew Arnold. I suspect that when he referred to the celebrated essay of Matthew Arnold, that most people in the room didn't know who Matthew Arnold was, unless you heard the Lichtenstein speak before, and probably never read the essay. And certainly have no idea why, by whom, and how it was celebrated. When Rav Aaron quoted the celebrated essay, he wasn't doing this to show off or to show how much he knew, but that was part of his personality. He felt that this insight enhanced the point he was trying to make, and you know it did. It did. He fused all of this into his worldview. As a son, one of his sons said at the Hesped, he was a person like a suah mutz of arza, but berosha magia shamayman, firmly planted on earth in this world, but his head aspiring for the heavens. He was not afraid to speak his mind. He understood the modern world, the struggles that people have, great insight into the human condition. About, I don't know, I think around 10 years ago, he gave a sikha on Tu Bishrat, or Shalom Ilonos, where he examined Robert Frost's poem, Stopping by Woods on a Snowy Evening, and he used that to talk about appreciating nature and trees. Who else? Who else could do that? He integrated Torah Mada, he believed in it, but at the same time critical. And he urged us not to hide behind that motto, and to take a cheshbon nefesh. I remember once commenting, I think it was here in Tinek, that he gave a talk. And he said, sometimes we hide behind Torah Mada. I remember the example he gave, was he said that if our, talking about the modern Orthodox community, if in our sleepaway camps, there's one less hour a day of learning than in the yeshivish sleepaway camps, it's not because we're spending the other hour studying philosophy or literature. We're playing more baseball. And he said, you know, you can't hide behind Torah Mada. The third thing one looks for, the final thing one looks for, I think, in a Rebbe, is character. You're a Shemayim. I remember once Rav Aaron gave a talk here again here in America, V'taher libeinu la'avdecha be'emes, where he expounded on each word. V'taher libeinu, does that mean la'avdecha be'emes? That was him. V'taher, purity, libeinu, a person of the heart, la'avdecha, to serve you, HaKadosh Baruch Hu, be'emes, in truth. And there are two aspects to a character. On a personal level, Rav Aaron was a tremendous gentleman, refined, dignified, a person who had a visible tzelem elokim, or a palpable tzelem elokim in any case. Tremendously high moral standards. A number of years ago, there was a certain scandal in Eretz Yisrael. The details are not important. I don't really know much about the situation. But when I read what Rav Aaron took a certain position, I knew which position was right, because I knew that if he took that position, there was no shtick, and no politics, and no agenda. And I wasn't trying to... It was emes. And one knew that one could trust him because of his own high moral standards. He had a massive intellect, there's no question. But he used that intellect to enrich his Yerushalayim and his Shlemus. He was a passionate person. Now we sometimes, I think many of us, myself included, sort of tended to view him as an unemotional person. But I think there was a mistake. I think that his lack of visible emotion was due more to his shyness and his humility than to a lack of passion. A person who reads literature and poetry and masters it the way he did is a passionate as an emotional person, even if it's not always displayed. The stiffness and the coldness was not him. You read how he writes. His writing is almost poetry. His writing has such depth to it, such feeling, such emotion to it. I think people perhaps misunderstood that. Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos, Kol Sheyiras Cheto Kodemus L'Chochmoso, Chochmoso Miskayemus. A person's wisdom endures if his Yiras Shamayim, his Yiras Chet, comes first. And he lived this. He had no pretenses about him. A humble person. My chavrusa when I was in Eretz Yisrael was a fellow who came from a more yeshivish high school who told me that he had no havamina to come to Gush. He was going to go to some more yeshivish place. But his father was a musmach of YU who knew Reb Aaron from the old days in the Beis Medrash. He suggested to his son, why don't you at least go meet him? He said, okay. This person was coming from a yeshivish place. He went to the Gush office. That time was somewhere in midtown Manhattan to meet the Baron. And he's sitting there in the office, and certain fellow, a man walks in and says, are you so-and-so? And then the young man said, yes. He started asking a few questions. He told me he was expecting a Rosh Hashiva is going to walk in with a long coat and a long beard and a big hat. And he thought this man talking was a guy from the office. He's going to make sure he has the right medical papers, or his application is filled out correctly. And he wasn't taught, didn't realize. Till as more and more questions, he went, wait a minute, this is him, this is a Rosh Hashiva. He couldn't imagine. Reb Aaron had no airs about him. He had no shtick. There was no pretenses. It was part of his humility. When he went to the army one time, Rabbi Tal Zichron Lebracha told us this story. Ron went to the army. He had to serve on the base, his first tour of duty. And Rabbi Tal, who was one of the leaders and organizers of the Hezder Yeshiva movement, called him in the army base during the week to ask him how things were going. This was his first stint in the army. So he's talking on the phone, and suddenly Rami Tal said he heard a commotion in the background, somebody screaming. So Ryan said, I have to go now, they need me to finish washing the pots. To which Rami Tal said that again? What are you doing? He said, I have to go finish washing the pots. So Rami Tal said, I want the commander of the base on the phone immediately. So do you, and it got to be, he was supposed to, usually Rabbanan go to the army base, so they organized the minyan. Somehow there was a mix-up. And he didn't realize who it was, so he had to go wash the pots. That's what he told me to do. That's what he did. And look at Tom, what do you mean? I'm a Rosh Hashiva. And I washed the pots. He washed the pots. That's what I mean by somebody who had no pretenses. His dealings with others represented his understanding of the Tzelem Elohim of every person. A number of people have made this point, and I'll make it again. The Chazal referred to Sefer Bereishis as Sefer HaYoshar, the Book of the Righteous. The Netziv has a famous introduction to Sefer Bereishis, which if you've never had a chance to read, you take a few minutes to read. It defines what a Yosher is. A Yosher, says the Netziv, a righteous person, like Rosh Baruch Hu, Tzadik Yosher, a righteous person, a Yosher, a straight person, is not somebody who identifies with and is kind towards and interacts with only those people who are exactly like him. Netziv writes, in strong language, of Rosh Baruch Hu has no need for those kinds of Yosher, who only tolerate and work with people just like them. And one of the examples that Siv gives is Avraham Avinu. Who could be more distant from Anshei Sidon than Avraham Avinu? And yet Avraham Avinu davened on behalf of Anshei Sidon. Ron Lichtenstein lived that notion of being a Yosher. Chazal tell us in Pirkei Avos, Hezeh Derech Yisharah Sheyavah Ha'adam Kalshu Tiferes Lo'oseh V'Tiferes Tiferes Lo'oseh V'Tiferes Lo'min Ha'adam. Derech Yosher is somebody who brings Tiferes. What's Tiferes? It's Tiferes for himself, Tiferes for others that see him. Tiferes is majesty, Tiferes is glory. Tiferes is also blending, or it's a harmony. And this was one area that, at least I didn't hear much from Aaron about, but in Hasidic literature and Kabbalistic literature, so Tiferes means the blending of Chesed and Gevura. But Aaron was Nifter on the day, which in the Sefiras HaOmer count, is the day identified as Gevura Shebe Tiferes. He was a gibor, a joy, great, a powerful person in Tiferes, and he was buried on the day Tiferes Shiva Tiferes, the man who stood for harmony. He's concerned for every single person. Just to close with a few final stories. when I was in, I was still in elementary school, so people, I guess, my age and older will remember that there were in the late 60s, early 70s, I think it was the late 60s still, there was a great famine in Africa, a country called Biafra. You remember that? Biafra. They were sending food, that rallies, this and that. There was a rally at the United Nations to help relieve the plight of the people in Biafra. And they had a rally, and Aaron Lichtenstein scheduled his shiur. This was told to me by someone who was in his shiur, that was in YU at that time, the late 60s or early 70s. He rescheduled his shiur so as to be able to enable himself and the boys to go to Biafra. And somebody asked him, Rebbe, rearrange Talmud Torah. And his response was, a humanitarian concern is a concern for us as well. And I think that encapsulates his philosophy. My daughter, my oldest daughter, had to make a certain life decision. I felt that the decision she was faced with would be more easily made and be helped along by meeting with an Adam Gadol. And I felt that for this particular issue, a Lichtenstein was the right person. And so I made an appointment. He was here in America. It was by his son, Muncie. So I went with my daughter so she could discuss this issue with him. And I went into the room, the study. I sat in the corner. My daughter talked. And he gave her over an hour of his time. When we walked out, my daughter was almost shaking. She said, what a human being. The way he talked, and I was listening, the way he talked to me, I was a 21-year-old kid. The way he talked was such derech eretz. I mean, he said to her, I hope you don't mind if I bring up this point. May you suggest it? You're one of the gedolei hador, you're one of my father's rebbeim. I'm coming to you, a little kid, and you're talking to me, and you're asking, is it okay if I say this, and may I suggest that? But that's how he talked. That was his refinement. That was his character. He gave Musar, people don't know this, I heard this from Yitzhak Cohen in YU years ago. Rav Lessen, Zichron Levrachem, I never met, but people who are older than me in the yeshiva will remember Rav Lessen was the Mashkiach in YU for many years. I was only a Levi when I was in high school. But when Rav Lessen used to give Musar in YU, it was a classic Bal Musar, I will remember as a classic Bal Musar. When Rav Lessen couldn't give the Musar Shmuz for that week or whatever the reason, so he had two people that he would have act as his substitute. And one of them was Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. We don't think of Rav Aaron in that way. But he gave Musar. Of course, he didn't necessarily use the Mesil Zisharim or the Tanya. He would use Hilchos Deis Neraba. But it was Musar nonetheless. But the truth is, he was a walking Musar Sefer. Those who saw him interact, and I remember when I was in Yeshiva, interact with his father. When his father was an old man, he couldn't hear and he couldn't see. You'd hear Rav Aaron screaming, you know, how many steps to walk over here? Come on. You know, just the way he worked with his father. I remember times, again, that my contemporaries will remember, sometimes on Shabbos he'd be walking and talking to him. He had one of his kids on his shoulders and he would stop and he would talk to him, learning while he was carrying his kids. Just how to interact with children, a great family man. The three stories which I shared in the Yeshiva, and I'll wrap up. When I was in Yeshiva, Rav Aaron lived in Yerushalayim, as he did for most of the time there. And apparently his contract, his deal with the Yeshiva was that they paid for his gas. He would go drive from Yerushalayim to the Yeshiva, and at the end of every month he would submit the receipts so they would reimburse him for his gas expenses. So I heard this from Dr. Breyer, who was the administrator of the Yeshiva, told me that one month the Baron came in and he was distraught because he had lost the receipts. And he has the... So Dr. Breyer said, okay, so you know, we'll look at what was last month. The distance didn't change, so we'll figure it out, you know, based on last month. And Aaron was concerned because maybe there weren't exactly the same number of days in the yeshiva this month as there were last month. So trying to figure out what to do, so Aaron said, well, I can tell you it was on the receipts. And he verbatim just explained exactly what it was. But I tell you that, obviously not just to tell you again, he had such an unbelievable memory, photographic memory, but because he did not want to take an extra nickel from the yeshiva that he was not entitled to. And people know that in the more recent years, people may not know the story, that when he took ill and he was no longer really able to serve the yeshiva the same way in terms of giving daily shiurim, he went to the board and the leaders of the yeshiva and asked them to lower his salary. How can I take the same amount of salary when I'm not doing the same thing for the yeshiva? Can any of us imagine somebody doing that? I related in YU that in 1967, during the Six-Day War, there was a rally in Washington that many organizations and yeshivas went to on behalf of the United States supporting Israel and so on. This was told to me by an individual who was in Rav Aaron's shiur at that time. So they went, their buses from YU, so they went to the rally in Washington, It was a whole day with whatever they were doing. On the way back, they came back from Washington, stopped along the way at a rest stop to get snacks and food and so on. There were kids and people on the bus. There were different stories how he gave shiur and whatever he did. So this individual who told me the story was scheduled when I got back to YU and was coming back at 1:30 in the morning to walk around back from YU. He lived in the Fort George Hill apartments, those who know Washington Heights, a few blocks from YU. And this person was supposed to walk him back. So everybody got off the bus and got picked up and went back to where they were going. So the person told me he's looking around and couldn't find him. So he thought, I guess he went by himself. He didn't wait for me, whatever. But then he figured, let me go look on the bus. Maybe Rav Aaron's there, he was learning, was waiting for him, got picked up, whatever. He got onto the bus, and there was Rav Aaron down on his hands and knees, helping the bus driver pick up all the garbage and the potato chip bags and the soda cans and the gum wrappers and everything else, so that the bus driver shouldn't have to do that himself at 1 or 1:30 in the morning. I mean, talk Hosea Ish, Asher Ruach Bo. Rav Aaron represented Yiras Hashem at the highest level. People told me that in the old days in YU, he used to lane Koheles. Koheles is long enough. When he lane Koheles, it was long. But every word, and especially the end, Sof Davar, Kol Nishma Yis Elokim Yirah, right, that's Elokim Yirah, it's Misosav Shemor. That's what he stood for. Remember here in Teaneck, before there was a girls' high school, so there was people talking about the idea years and years before. And so there was a meeting at somebody's house. It wasn't really a meeting, it was a get-together in somebody's house to which they invited Rav Aaron to come speak about how we should educate Jewish young ladies. Yes, study Gemara, not study Gemara, all that issue. But the first 25 minutes of that presentation, he spoke about inculcating Yiras Shamayim. That's what Chinuch is about. Never mind, you learn Gemara, you don't learn Gemara, the first 25 minutes. I loved every minute of it. Because that's what it's about. And that's what he stood for. The Pasuk says in Koheles, Yirei Elokim Yetzeis Kulam. Yirei Elokim will go for everything. The Medrash has two different interpretations of what that means. It says, Kigon Rabavol V'Kisrin. Like Rabavol. That itself has two different meanings. What's Rabavol? So one opinion is Rabavol was a Baki in Mishnayos and Toseftas and Gemara. Knew everything. That certainly applied to Rabban. But there's another answer. Kigon Rabavol. Rabavol was the one, Kiyashofer, where the Truah should be this sound or that sound. He engineered the unification of the Jewish community. And that too is a Baron. To bring people together, that's the harmony. The passing of somebody like him from the previous door, who yet had exposure to our Soloveitchik Zichron Levracha at the height of his power, to Rav Hutner Zichron Levracha at the height of his power, we're not likely to see such a person again. The pasuk, you know, in Amos, it speaks about the death of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, and it compares the death, the way Chazal understood the pasuk. It refers to the death of Yoshiyahu HaMelech, comparing it to the sun setting in the middle of the day. Usually, that's understood to mean Yoshiyahu didn't live till a ripe old age, and the idea of the sun setting in the middle of the day is that a person didn't live out his days, didn't live that long. The difficulty is that the Gemara applies that pasuk to Yochanan. Yochanan, according to Chazal, lived till 120. So why that moshel of the sun setting in the middle of the day? He lived till the end of the day, so to speak. So remember, once heard that Yaakov Kamenetz said by the Levaya of the old South of Rabbi, the old Tadabar, said what it means is something else. It's not a matter of the age. How do we know the sun's going to come up tomorrow morning? It's a chazok. It came up this morning, came up yesterday morning, so the sun's going to come up tomorrow morning. But if the sun sets in the middle of the day, everything's changed. Well, who knows what's going to happen tomorrow? Everything's been turned upside down. When Adam Gadol dies, regardless of the age, the world is not the same as it was before. And I think that's how we feel. This is a great man. None of us here are Rav Aaron, but we have the opportunity to be the Talmid of Shalom, the students of Aaron. Oev Shalom, Rodev Shalom, Oev Esabrios, Umakarvam HaTorah. That's what it's all about. Yehi Zichor Baruch, Tein Nishmas HaTzura B'Tzorah Chai.
I want to articulate just for one moment one of the greatest tributes to the Hespedim is the individuals who are giving the Hespedim. when one sees Rav Aaron through Talmidim, so accomplished and so dedicated to Klal Yisrael, one obviously gets a glimpse of the person that he was. And therefore it's a great kovod for us to have heard from Rav Tavis, to hear now from Rav Jachter. Both are accomplished Talmidei Chachamim who are equally comfortable with Lomdus as they are with Psak Halacha. Both are Mechabrim, authors of well-received Svarim. Both are Mechanchim, Peches Elyon, noted educators from whom we benefit. Both are abundant. Both are involved with our community, both in the larger concerns of institutions, as well as being concerned about the ongoings of individuals and dedicating much time and much effort and everything always in a measured fashion. Therefore, it's a great COVID to bring her back.
Thank you, Rav Neuberger, for your very kind introduction. Kvod Rav Cohen, Kvod Moriv Rabbi and Rav Adler. Kvod to all the Rabbanim who are gathered. And thank you for all of you for giving me this honor to do the best I can to honor my Rebbe. Father has died. As Elisha said about Eliyahu HaNavi and Eliyahu went up to Shemayim, Avi Avi, Rechav Yisrael Efarashav. We heard that bitter news on Monday morning. All the Talmidim, everyone that I spoke to said the reaction was we were crying. Rav Aaron wasn't just a Rebbe. He was a father figure. We all feel that we lost a father, a revered father. And I know this is the way that he felt towards us. When I was in Eretz Yisrael in 1993 to be tested to receive authorization to be Masada Gittin, as soon as I received an authorization from Zalman Chaim Goldberg and Rav Avi Yosef Zatzal and Rav Yibar Lachaim Rav Zalman Chaim Goldberg, as soon as I received that, I ran as soon as I can to Rav Lichtenstein. Went to his house in Katamon, as he lived at the time, and I was so proud to show it to him, and he looked at it and he looked at me and he said, "I feel like a proud father today, a proud parent to see that you accomplished this." One of the greatest moments of my life. It's very, very scary to get up here and speak about this. Not only to speak to such a wonderful body of a Rabbanim and distinguished audience, but it's enormously scary to the thought of delivering a proper hesped for Rav Aaron Lichtenstein. In general, the Gemara writes in Shabbos is an onesh for not eulogizing someone properly. The generation was punished after Yeshua passed away, was nanash for not eulogizing Yeshua properly. The Kavu Chomer for Rav Aaron Lichtenstein, not only because he's an Adam Gadol, but he's incredibly machbid about Hespedim. I heard him tell a story about how he attended the Levaya for Rav Aaron Kotler Zatzal. This is 1962, and I heard Rav Aaron Lichtenstein tell the story in 1986. And he was so upset. He told the story about how all they kept on saying he was a tzaddik, he was a gadol, and he knew so much, he learned so much. This is all they said. They described and captured who he was. He was so upset. It was 25 years later, and I heard the story, and he still seemed so upset. Very rare for Rav Lichtenstein to be upset. That was one of the few times that I ever saw him that he was really upset. And I'm going to try very hard not to repeat. Not just sort of powers and beautiful, beautiful hesped he just delivered, but to add something significant to what the others have said. And one of the things that I believe that Rav Lichtenstein, I never heard him articulate this, but I believe that he very much felt a deep responsibility to serve as a role model for everybody else. I think he understood who he was, he understood his position, he understood that everybody looked up to him, and I believe that he really tried very much to serve the role model for us and to do his best to work hard to serve in that role. And I like to outline a number of these areas. I know I won't be able to cover all of them, but I'll do as best as I can. First, the way that he forged a deep relationship with the Kaddish Baruch Hu. To see Rav Aaron Lichtenstein davening, just to watch him how to watch him daven, was to learn how to daven. We asked him once, we had these beautiful Ask the Rabbi sessions, we'd ask him, the American students, how do we able to connect with Hashem? He said, you can find Hashem at unexpected times. One time you can be riding the bus, a crowded bus, all of a sudden in the middle of nowhere, Kaddish Baruch Hu is going to come to you. You can watch children playing in the park in the middle of the night, and you can feel that Kaddish Baruch Hu, you can feel Kaddish Baruch Hu encountering you. And he wrote that the biggest help in his emunah, he wrote a beautiful article about the source of faith, his faith, about what are the sources of emunah. He spoke about his parents, his rebbeim, his Am Yisrael, and the survival of Am Yisrael. He wrote his biggest help in developing his emunah is the Ribbono Shel Olam. He spoke about how the Ribbono Shel Olam feels he came to him, spoke to him, addressed him, felt close with him. Second area is his hasmada. That the Rav Tavis spoke about. I just wanted to add one point from my old Rebbe, from Rabbi Dulitz. Rabbi Dulitz, who was a college classmate of Rav Lichtenstein, told us about the routine that Rav Lichtenstein had in the years he was at Yeshiva College, and his routine was as follows. Every night of the base medrash till 1:30 in the morning. And then he would study for his secular studies from 1:30 to 3:30 in the morning. But Thursday night, he would stay up in the Beis Medrash every single Thursday night till 4:30 in the morning. No secular studies on Thursday night. And he described that Rav Lichtenstein had a falling apart Rambam. That if you went to his table, and you often would go to his table before his friends had questions, they would go to him. You go to his table, you had to be very, very careful. Because if you banged in the wrong way, you'd send that Rambam flying in all different directions. And if you'd find it and you'd send that Rambam flying in all different directions, it would, who knows how long it would take to put that Rambam back together. Incredible dictum from mitzvos. And it's helped me to know that the chumras in certain areas, chadash, erevin, you wouldn't rely on community, erevin, tzedakah. The way he would, to see him, if you ever catch him on Rehov Yaakov, before the light rail, on Rehov Yaakov, to see the aniyim, all that, he went to every single ani, and the kotel, every single ani, he gave them something. It was incredible. One of his talmidim, Rav Shmuel David, one of the Israeli talmidim, wrote a very nice collection of tshuvot called Shelot Tshuvot Merot Surin. He writes about the issue of one of the tshuvot about whether you require bizman hazeh to dip the bread into salt. So he writes, do you have to? Not a friend, because then you probably don't have to. Then he writes, it's mitzvah, it's a very nice thing to do. And he writes, the way he concludes, V'chein Ra'isi, Mori Varabi, Rav Lichtenstein, Tar Ma'ot, zealously going after Achar HaMelech, V'snei Berkat HaMotzi, to go as best as he can to make sure, zealously, to go after bread. Rav Lichtenstein, I noticed, when I think about, especially now, as Parshas Tazria and Besora, we think about how we do to be more careful about avoiding Lashon Hara. You know, Rav Lichtenstein, I think all the time, Rav Lichtenstein never said anything that even approached Lashon Hara. Never. Never. And as I saw one of the Hespedim, I saw that Rav Yitzchak, his son Rav Yitzchak Lichtenstein, mentioned he never heard his father say a word of Lashon Hara. It was a story that happened the year that I was in yeshiva. He gave on a Matzei Shabbos. I remember it was Parshas Toldos. He spoke about Tfilas Kalim. It was a beautiful shiur. And he spoke about one of the problems that we're familiar with. Why did Tfilas Kalim on an electric appliances? So the safety issue, what to do. So he suggested an idea. What we should do is, should we maskier your electric appliances? And he was maskier that you have to prepare food in. So he mentioned that he was maskier his toaster. So that Purim, we went to his house, the Shushan Purim, so the yeshiva on Yedalin, the Shushan, we go to Yushalayim. So one of the boys, the Purim prank, had the brilliant idea to go grab Rav Lichtenstein's toaster. And Rav Lichtenstein, of course, didn't say a word. Because his hefker doesn't belong, doesn't own it. It's not his. I don't know if you, don't own it. So after Purim was over, he came back to give the toaster to Rav Lichtenstein, and then Rav Lichtenstein refused to take back the toaster. And as he said, no, I meant it was hefker, and I really meant it. Rav Lichtenstein really showed us that Torah is very, very real, very real, to be adhered to scrupulously. The vast Torah knowledge is incredible. But just the incredible thing was that he inspired a desire to want to be like him. I don't know how he did it, but all of us wanted so much. I want to be like Rav Lichtenstein. I was very much like us. We wanted to do as best as we could. Just such an inspiring model. And you know, he displayed his immense knowledge with Anava, with his humility. And when talking about Anava, his humility, he could write a book, write 10 books about stories put together with his Anava. One story that happened that I saw one time, I was on Shmirah, and I was in the Mizdaron, I think it was in the hallway. So I was sitting there, and two Israelis were passing by, and one of them said to his friend, whose name was Aaron, he said to him, Aaron, yeshcha gafur, you know, Aaron, do you have a match? So Rav Lichtenstein was passing by, and he said, you know, I'm sorry, I don't have one. Now, it didn't bother him whatsoever that someone would call him Aaron. He wasn't even speaking to him. So it's just amazing. It's just amazing. Rav Tavis mentioned when I was in Yeshiva from 1981 to 1983. Yes, remember very much the way he took care of his frail and elderly parents. It was incredible. It was with kindness. It was with sensitivity. It was joyful. It wasn't a burden. He loved it. And I had the opportunity to see Rav Lichtenstein treated with similar kindness during his older years, during a recent visit to Muncie to pick him up, bring him to TABC when he spoke to the last time at TABC. He was an outstanding parent. He traveled to Netiv Meir to learn with his boys. He learned with all his children. He spoke Hebrew with his children. Even his Israeli children, I was always surprised, maybe he'd want to teach them English. His children were born in Eretz Yisrael. The two younger children, he spoke to them in Hebrew. And I was at a shiur. He invited me. I had a great honor. He invited me to Shavuot Brachos for Rabbi Yitzchak Ad, who was held as young Israel of Hillcrest. I think this was 1986. And he spoke about how, yes, the son has become more yeshivish, a little different than I am. But he said, but that's what good parenting is about. He was Pasha Shlach, and he spoke about like dough. You know, it's raising children like dough. You form the dough, and the dough goes in the direction that it wants to go. And that's good parenting. Sometimes parents, you know, when they want their children to be exactly like them, and the child shouldn't be a little to the left, a little to the right, so be exactly like them. That's not healthy parenting. And Rav Lichtenstein was not like that. He was a loving and a caring spouse. It was in a sneeze way, but it was obvious to all the Talmudim. PhD in English literature. Yes, he explained it's enriching. It helped, he mentioned it helps in understanding Tanakh. Chachma Bagoyim Yesh the Medrash and Medrash Eichad. He wrote famously, we ignore it in a celebrated essay, that we ignore it at our loss. And more important and unstated is that what the PhD in English literature meant to a lot of people, I know it meant to me, it gave us a lot of chizuk in our emunah. A story I had just in my family, and I bet you, I'm confident that others have had this experience as well. I had an uncle on my father's side who was considered to be the family genius. He had a PhD in engineering from NYU. He helped design the Verrazano Bridge. And unfortunately, difficult experience as a child, he didn't have that much respect for Torah, and he wasn't shy to express it. But when he'd come over to the house, the family admired him, but I knew I had a Rebbe who not only knew Kol HaTorah Kula, he also had a PhD from Harvard, and he knew better. And Rav Lichtenstein believed that Torah was true. I knew that Torah was true. Tziyonut Datit, religious Zionism, the passion of religious Zionists, Chovei Tzion, an amazing line for Lichtenstein that he wrote about how, what would the Ramban, who came to Yerushalayim, when he visited, he wrote, Kala Kadosh Yoteh, Charuv Yoteh, that which is more holy, the more holy it is, the more destroyed it is. What would the Ramban give to be a Rosh Yeshiva, Yeshiva has there? What a beautiful line. He had the courage to make Aliyah, despite, I may be putting it mildly, the Rav's lack of enthusiasm for that move. He modeled us for us a tremendous love for Eretz Yisrael. He wrote about Yeshivot Hezder. It's not that we love Torah less, we love Eretz Yisrael more. He modeled greatness in Torah. He said that we should be, the Dati Lumi community, the modern Orthodox community, should be great in Torah. He modeled for us. We shouldn't just be with Eretz Yisrael and with Torah, but we should have greatness in Torah. He expected, he set high standards for us. Torah, Gemara tells us we should be that a man should make his business to marry a Bas Talmid Chacham. The Rambam explains a Bas Talmid Chacham is Yodas the Keser of Torah and understands what the Keser Torah, the crown of Torah, is all about. And if you want to know what the crown of Torah, you needed to listen to a Shir Kali of Rav Lichtenstein. A Shir Kali, especially a 2.5 hour Shir, a Shir Kali from Rav Lichtenstein. The depth of Torah, the emes of Torah, the profundity of Torah, how profound it was, unparalleled in any sect of the discipline. What a tremendous physical Torah, what a Keser Shel Torah, what depth unparalleled. Dedication to Am Yisrael. Chayvim l'tron l'am Yisrael. Rav Lichtenstein, you must contribute to the Jewish people. I'll never forget what an amazing, stirring speech on Purim of Tashrin and Beis, right before hearing Megillah, a great moment, speaking about how Mordechai convinced Esther to step up for the Jewish people in this time of great need. Rav Lichtenstein implored us to step up for all of us, to step up for Am Yisrael in its time of need. And a wonderful moment. Rav Lichtenstein, we asked him, sometimes it's a little bit hard to swallow when people are in other Orthodox circles a little bit less tolerant of who we are, don't necessarily always give an acknowledgement of our genuine commitment. And Rav Lichtenstein, you responded with these words, tolerate the intolerance. He shared a little bit of his own stories, a little bit, but he said you should tolerate the intolerance, love the Jewish people, tremendous love from Yisrael. Three words, and they speak for themselves: morality, integrity, authenticity. That's Rav Lichtenstein. And I want to end with this and describing how he set a role model for us. Rav Neria was once asked, do we have any Nisim Gluim, do we have any open miracles in our day? He said, yes, go to Yeshivat Haratzion. You'll see Rav Amital and Rav Lichtenstein. Shnei Melachim Mishtamshim B'Keter Echad. You'll see two kings using one crown. So beautiful. Rav Lichtenstein and Rav Amital. One of the most beautiful moments in the yeshiva was after Ne'ilah. Rav Lichtenstein came over to give Yashikach to Rav Amital. And Rav Amital was about to shake his hand. Rav Amital, instead of shaking his hand, gave him a kiss. It was just a beautiful moment to see the love between these two great men who lesser people would be his competitors. Instead, these two people, these two great men, loved each other so much. Father is done. He thought he would have him a lot longer. He was so strong. He came to the Beis Medrash, or Rebbe Tavis was describing it, that he walked so fast, and he was a big, big, that many shots, I just wanted so many, but in his Rambam, he's such a strong man. And see him weak was very sad. And see him struggle to give his shear was sad. Sad to get the news on Monday morning. But Gedolim Tzaddikim Misasam Yosim L'Chayeh. Human nature is we appreciate and cherish only after we lose something. Father expected much from us. We hope we met at least partially his expectations. Rav Lichtenstein continues to serve as a powerful role model for us. He spoke of Reb Chaim as his Rebbe, Rebbe Kiva Eger as a role model of his. And we hope that all of us can continue to serve, whether Talmidim or not. We hope that we can act in a way that pleases Father with the lowercase, so we may please Father with the uppercase of Avinu Shebashamayim.
Devin Marvin, a few moments. I want to thank the RCBC, led by Rav Pufko, that honored us this evening to host this Azkor for Rav Lichtenstein. I want to thank Rav Tanchum Kohn, who made all the arrangements. And it was the week after we laid the whole B'nai Yisroel Yivkuas HaSarifah. There are times when you need Klal Yisroel in order to appreciate and give appropriate expression to the loss that Klal Yisroel suffered. We should think it's important to point out that when Rav Aaron went to Eretz Yisroel, he was going largely in uncharted territories, and he was giving up a future in America of being what he then became in Eretz Yisrael. But he was giving up a charted course of great leadership in America, familiar territory, in order to be in Eretz Yisrael, in order to challenge a generation to love Eretz Yisrael. He was an individual who, in his writings and in his person, he spoke to the many, many tensions that our community has. Tensions between the ethic of Torah and the morality of the general culture. The tensions between the intense and uncompromising study of Torah and the embracing of the fullness of human experience. And it was in Rav Aaron that, even if we only caught glimpses and pieces, but we knew that since this is an integration, was possible. We knew that all of these tensions could create the much greater tapestry. It's for Kol B'nei Yisroel, but it requires the breadth of Klal Yisroel. When we'll see, as we go further, where is Talmidim Ar, and how is Talmidim Ar impacting Klal Yisroel, then we'll get, and continue to get, a greater and broader picture, an appreciation of the great loss that you've suffered this week. I thank you for coming. It's Oscar and Devin Marvel and Taylor.